Today's episode of the Film Stage Show is brought to you by MUBI, the online streaming cinema. For your free 30-day trial of MUBI, go to mubi.com/filmstage. Ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Show, the film review podcast for the filmstage.com. I'm your host, Brian J. Rowan. With me today, to carry out this mission, we have Michael Snydell.
Hello, good morning.
And we also have Bill Graham.
Call me Satchel.
You're a traitor?
All right. I guess.
Sure. Today we're going to be reviewing Atomic Blonde, the newest film from John McKodorek and David Leitch, and starring Charlize Theron and James McAvoy. Before we get into that, we have some basic housekeeping stuff. And yeah, that's it. So let's move on into that so that we can get right to the main event. First of all, you can follow us on Twitter at Film Stage Show. Follow us on Facebook, search for The Film Stage Show. Give us a comment and a rating on iTunes. And, of course, you can email us, podcast@thefilmstage.com, with any of your longer-form thoughts. And we are on Patreon now, so get on Patreon and become a patron for as little as $1 an episode, and you will be entered into movie raffles, you will be entered in to listen to our Slack channel, and take part in our conversations there. So if you've ever wanted a chance to tell us in real time, live and in person, how you feel about us, that is your opportunity. All you have to do is go to patreon.com/thefilmstageshow and sign up for as little as $1 an episode, and you will be entered in to all of our raffles automatically from henceforth. It's a great opportunity. It's a good way to help us do more with this show. Again, that is patreon.com/thefilmstageshow. We are also brought to you by MUBI, the streaming online cinema. Unlike Amazon or Netflix, where they buy up whole libraries at a time for you to watch, which can be messy, to say the least, for anyone who's looked at Netflix's crop of films, in quotes. MUBI has curators who select one film at a time, so they're adding one film each day, and you have 30 days to watch, and then that film disappears. So you have a constantly rotating selection of 30 great movies to check out. This month, they are doing a Jean Renoir retrospective, six of his films. So if you would like to cop on board and be able to check out their selection, all you have to do is go to mubi.com/filmstage, and you can get a free 30-day trial on us. Again, that is MU.
Is Golden Coach one of those?
I don't know.
That's one of my favorites. So if that's on there, I would highly recommend watching that one.
But none of the other ones.
No, he doesn't have any other good movies.
Oh my god!
I saw Grand Illusion on there. That one's definitely worth some time. good start.
Snydell only wants to see Golden Coach. All right. Yes. So again, that is mubi.com/filmstage. For your free 30-day trial of MUBI. So that is that. Gentlemen, any other things to talk about before we get into our review of Atomic Blonde?
Nope. Actually, we're ready to go.
All right. Then let's talk about it. This film just hit theaters and wide release this weekend. And
yes,
again,
it
is directed by David Leitch. Stars Charlize Theron, James McAvoy. And actually, John Goodman's in there, too, and I love him, so I'm going to give him a shout-out. And, yeah, here is the trailer.
I chose this life. And someday, it's going to get me killed. But not today.
Lorraine Broughton, expert in intelligence collection and hand-to-hand combat.
Agent Gascoigne was killed last night. Did you know him?
Enough to say hello.
He had an atomic bomb of information. Find out who's hunting our operatives and trust no one.
That is the trailer for Atomic Blonde. Gives you basics of the plot. Charlize Theron is Lorraine Broughton, who is a British intelligence officer who is brought into Berlin days before the fall of the Berlin Wall in order to retrieve a list of agent names and try to find out who double-crossed Agent Gaskellin and got him killed. A cavalcade of bizarre characters follows, as well as lots of violence and lots of other stuff. Let's talk about this movie and see what we all thought about it. Bill Graham, let's start with you. What were your thoughts on Atomic Blonde?
So, first off, coming off of look, we can't get away from the connections with John Wick, whether it's John Wick 2 or the original, because David Leitch obviously was a co-director on that, whether the DGA wants to admit it or not. And so this film, in a lot of ways, shares a lot of similarities, mainly in that the two main actors in both of those films gave a ton of their time to pre-production to kind of train and study and figure out a lot of these fight sequences, which really show up on screen in a big, big way. For an action film, that's kind of a critical factor. And yet we get a lot of big budget action films that have a ton of CGI sequences and things like that and quick editing, and you can't see anything that's actually happening on screen. And it's really unfortunate. This time around, there is a semi kind of one shot, one take, one long, rolling take, that starts in a stairwell and ends up kind of funneling over into the streets. And it is absolutely jaw-dropping how well it is kind of put together. Theron really sells the fact that she's just a kick-ass heroine. But I also love that she gets injured a lot. The opening sequence, I think, or one of the opening scenes, is we see her getting out of a bathtub and she is just bruised and bloodied from head to toe, it looks like. And I enjoy the fact that this film is very kind of gritty, in the trenches kind of hand-to-hand combat action film that it kind of revolves around. I also like that she disarms more people than she shoots in this film. So it is kind of a tweak on the John Wick kind of idea, where she isn't just running around mowing down people. She's literally disarming them over and over and over. She's killing a few of them, but mainly she's getting them out of her way. It's an interesting kind of tweak on the John Wick connection as well. I had heard that this film was similarly plotted in a confusing way to Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. Whether you think Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy is confusing or not, that's kind of up to you. But I had heard that that was kind of the plotting of this film. And for the first hour and a half, I was like, I don't see that at all. This is pretty run by the numbers, pretty standard, pretty straight up. And then the last 30 minutes kick in and you're just like, what? What's going on right now? So it really does kind of take on one of those feared things where it's like twist after twist after twist happens that doesn't necessarily add any intrigue, that doesn't necessarily – it's not that it's confusing. It's more that it's just unnecessary and it feels tacked on in a lot of ways. And I feel like this film really kind of struggles under the weight of the last 30 minutes or so. Thierin is great. I really enjoy James McAvoy as well. It's a lot of fun to watch. And I think the music in the film is not little. It's very heavy-handed. It is basically the best of the 80s. And at some point, there is another use of, I believe, David Bowie's Cat People, which if you've kind of have been paying attention throughout the years, Tarantino used that in Inglourious Basterds to great effect. And this film uses it again to also light something on fire. And I was just like, the music choices in this film reminded me more of why can't I think of anything right now? The not Sinister Styx, the other film with the Suicide Squad. Yes, it reminded me of. Well, you know, other groups of bad people. It reminded me of kind of the worst qualities of Suicide Squad in a lot of ways with the music selection here. It's not as bad because you don't get a top 10 of the 70s hits in like 10 seconds. But yeah, what else would I say about this film? It looks really good. It's shot really well. Beyond that, I'm done talking.
Okay. So in general, were you positive on this?
Yes, I enjoyed myself. The last 30 minutes really kind of put me in a tailspin, but for an hour and a half, I was thoroughly entertained.
Okay. Michael Slidell, what were your thoughts on Atomic Blonde?
Well, guys, I wanted to walk out of this movie until I remembered that we're talking about it this weekend. I absolutely hated this movie.
Bring in the fire.
You know, I've disliked things and I try to rationalize, we certainly talked about it Comes at Night. Is that? Yeah, that's the name of that movie. Yes. It Comes at Night. And, you know, I tried to talk about things I like. There's almost nothing.
I'm the only person that doesn't remember things on this podcast. Don't start doing that.
I don't want to take your stick, Bell. There's almost nothing I like about this movie. This is weird because it kind of epitomizes the worst aspects of 2000s action. Sorry, 2000s action. Why can't I say 2000? 2000s era action movies. In the sense of how self-satisfied and sour and then self-important it becomes. Like this is a movie that from minute one is just like everything's done with a smirk. Everything is just done with this glibness. And it's like I described this on Twitter. It's like if Nicholas Winding and Refn discovered jokes. And I find Refn to be like he does things that are humorous, but he thankfully never ever does, you know, fucking puns or things like that. And this movie's just so full of it. And from like minute one. And so like getting into actual things other than just like pure hate. It is interesting about its relation to, you know, John Wick. If nothing else, it's an interesting case study to see that John Wick 2 earlier this year was, I have to think Leitch was still involved in some way, but at least Stileski is the main credited person as the director of John Wick 2. Mm-hmm. This is obviously Leitch, and it's very interesting having actually rewatched John Wick 2 this week. Completely forgetting Atomic Blonde was this week. And it was really interesting to note that Leitch is a far more caffeinated, more acrobatic director in terms of his camera movements. When you think about Wick and Wick 2, what's so interesting about you know, the language when we talk about, like, you know, Keanu being, you know, a ballet of gunfire and, you know, the gun foo and stuff. It's just like the camera is very much fixated in a place. And this movie is so restless from just the beginning. And you know, it evokes things like, you know, Matthew Vaughn or Guy Ritchie, if I'm being nice. But the movie this really, really reminded me of was if Boondock Saints was actually gorgeously shot, in the sense that it's an incredibly just like juvenile, just mean-spirited movie that just thinks you're having fun for the longest time. And that is partly baked into the way that this film is made, in the sense that, you know, you have Charlize Theron playing this, you know, like, to be very simplistic, like a very icy, very impassive, very, a character who is like conditioned with numbness. And that like follows in it taking place in the Cold War, and like just this movie just becomes further and further mired in like, and not only pointlessness as far as the story, which is fucking garbage as far as I'm concerned, but this pointlessness that it wants to communicate with the themes and the way that people can just die, are just inevitably going to die because that's the world we live in, which is an obnoxious worldview in itself. But then it's also just a movie that's filled with like pop culture references, and Bill already mentioned the needle drops, which just like I was just like howling at how, and not only on the nose when the needle drops start, but when they start and stop during battles, like just how obnoxiously triggered it is. And there's just I'm not sure what exactly is, but there was just a real thudding lack of poetry to the violence in this movie, in the way that John Wick does communicate it. And I think it's a few different things. I will finish up right now. One is that it's a different writer. It's Kurt Johnstadt.
Instead of Derek Kolstad.
Indeed.
Okay,
and check this out. Who wrote the actual graphic novel? Anthony Johnston. It's like, oh,
God damn it!
Come on, guys.
Okay, so
this is
so Kurt Johnstad
for us this entire time. Getting these names sorted out.
His CV is kind of full of movies that did kind of also have this self-seriousness and these grander proclamations. He was responsible for writing both 300s. He wrote Act of Valor, which is, you know, essentially a military training video. Derek Kolstad wrote both John Wicks. And you know, thinking about just in terms of philosophies, what was so interesting to me about John Wick and John Wick 2, which I think I talked about in our review earlier this year, is that it, you know, kind of evokes like European and especially Japanese crime cinema, in the sense of just like this mutual respect between characters, like this like primal this existentialism that exists at every moment in these battles, that like gives it this weight. And this movie, the weight is just not there. Like it's glossiness that is, it's the way that this movie is like bathed in fluorescent glow, and it's like aesthetically pretty, sure, but like there's just it is so reaching in how much it just wants to like continually remind you of how much it's not only reminding you of other things like a la Tarantino, but also how much it's trying to remind you how cool it is. And that's just like, it is so irritating to me that so much of this movie is about that. And then here's my last thought. There is literally a moment, and I will not reveal who says this, that there's a moment where a character turns to the camera and says, "Who won?" And that was the third time in the movie where I'm like, fuck this movie. Like, there is – I'm amazed how sour and just again, I have only this is the only movie Leitch has done, so I can't say I can only say that like as a sensibility, I think I like Stileski more. There's a burliness and an anchoring to every set piece and scene. And again, like that might be unfair to credit that to only that, but like, guys, I fucking hated this movie.
All right. yeah, I didn't really like this movie that much either. But I feel like following up on what Michael said, I might like it a little less even now.
I just knocked my headphones off.
That's incredible. Yeah, I mean, so like, here's the, it is hard to extricate one of these films from the other. So like, we have the John Wicks, and then we have the Atomic Blonde, and so when this movie came out, I really thought it was going to be here's Charlize Theron just kicking her ass all over Berlin just to kill the guy who killed a guy she knew, which is like. Pretty much just like John Wick, but if it was someone killed John Wick's wife instead of someone killed John Wick's dog.
Or like had his puppy
died. Yeah.
Right, yeah, like, it's like, yeah, all you need, and that was one of the beautiful things about John Wick, was that, yeah. Like, it cut through the bullshit, because, like, we've had an escalation of plot recently, where, like, yes. You can't just have a simple revenge story, like, it has to go all sure. The way to the top. And there have to be double crosses and stuff. And John Wick was like, who's the good guy? John Wick. Who's the bad guy? Everyone who ain't John Wick. And it was just...
Yep.
It was super simple and easy. And sure. And that simplicity of plot allowed you to do a lot of character and world building.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Because you have a finite resource in a film known as time. And so the amount of time...
Some directors don't know that.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, even if you make a 4-hour film, the time that you have is still a finite resource. You only have now 4 hours. Now, what you do with that is up to you. And in John Wick, they said, how much plot do we want? Minimal amount. Okay, great. Now that means we have to fill in everything else with other cool stuff. Now, Atomic Blonde, on the other hand, has like a Game of Thrones series season worth of plot. But condensed down to a point that is I just like I don't know. God, I know that usually in movies like this,
sure,
like we go into spoilers. We're like, okay, here's Brian to explain everything, just so we can get it all out of the
good,
way.
Good luck, Brian. Good luck.
I have no fucking clue what happened in this movie. I am lost. I was lost, kind of from moment one.
Yep.
Because we start off. With it's not a spoiler to say that we start off with the murder of the agent that kicks off the entire movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then it says 10 days later, and we see Charlize Theron, and then she's going to a debriefing, which then segues into a flashback of her briefing. And it's like the most confusing, strange way to set up a movie that I've like encountered recently. Like why?
This is standard stuff where we get
this is not standard. Like the way that
pulled set it off up here
is really messy and sloppy. And I
that is true. That is true.
Yeah.
But I think the setup is standard where you have someone being asked questions and they're sure. Retelling the story of then going 10 days later and then. Back and you're like, wait, why are we going back?
Sure.
Like,
yeah,
why did we jump ahead to then go back?
Exactly.
By the way,
you have the murder, and then you do like 5 days later, and then it's her arriving, or you do just her in the scene with the two guys from like Langley and MI6, and then it's like, so tell us everything, and then it's like, okay, well, it all started with, and then you flash back to 10 days earlier, and then you kill the guy. I'm not sure what the purpose of setting it up exactly that way was, other than to kick us off with a, like, 20-second-long chase scene followed by a murder.
Doesn't it also deflate the tension to beginning with 10 days later? Like it's this
in a way. That's what one of my friends said was like, "Oh, hey, cool. So I guess Charlie's is gonna survive." And he's like, yeah. Well, crap.
And yeah, it's just and they set up these other characters who like seem as though they could have been cool if this movie had been written by like Irving Welsh or something, you know, to get the writer Trainspotting in here, and suddenly James McAvoy's like weird ass in Too Deep agent could be interesting, but like, I mean, it's just. It's hard to like really nail down what the problem in this movie is because I feel like there are so many that make a bigger one.
Yes, they all combine. They Voltron that shit.
Like. Because yeah, you have the bad like choice of structure and framing for the film, and then you have these very thin characters that act seemingly without reason.
Well, I don't know if y'all saw 300 Rise of an Empire. I think it was what it was called.
I did not see that one, but yeah.
That movie is is really hankily structured as well. Like it is really oddly structured because I remember originally when it was in like pre-production and it was about to come out, a lot of people were like, "Oh, it's a sequel to 300," and a lot of people were like, "No, it's a prequel to sequel." And then it became a pre-sequel, and it was like, what? That doesn't make any sense. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's and here's the thing. So, I love Wanted. I love mm-hmm. Face Off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I love fucking Space Jail. I love Lockout. Like, I can get behind a shittily plotted, nonsensical action film. And if I were ever gonna really give a movie a pass, it would be this one, because I love James McAvoy. I love Charlize Theron. I think that she, in this movie, equips herself really well with all the action scenes, but I feel like like John Wick is a character who comes off as icy, but is mm-hmm. really just, like, sad and broken, and then he, like, mm-hmm. metamorphoses
totally.
Into a fucking... Fury monster.
Demon, yeah.
Yeah. And in this
movie, Baba Yaga.
He becomes the Baba Yaga.
Baba Yaga, yeah.
And in this movie, Charlize Theron, like, she has such... Like, we've seen her in movies do a lot with a little. Like, Furiosa sure. is not a showy role, but she imbues that character with a shit ton of pathos. And even... even in the Fast and Furious, yeah. She is that's a ridiculous movie that makes no sense, but she is so threatening in that. And in this, she's very icy in like a Ken Fawcett like novel cover kind of way. But like it doesn't ever conspire to create a more interesting character. And then the end of the movie just makes it even more infuriating because I watched Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. I love that movie. I got that movie all the way through the first time. Like, if you're paying attention, that movie makes a shit ton of sense. This movie, I don't know. I don't know what the plot is. I don't know how they make these character jumps. And at the end of the day, I still don't know what happened. like you were saying, Michael, there's a point where a character says, "Who won?" And my response was, "I don't think anyone's won yet. Like, I don't think it's over. Like, this
that's very close to the end, too."
Yeah. I'll say this again. Charlize Theron is great in the action scenes, but I feel like there's too much other stuff really penning her in from, like, creating an interesting character that I'd want to even see again.
Why are there so many characters in this movie, by the way?
I don't know, because as soon as you say that, I can really only think of, like, three characters. But then I start thinking of all the other characters that don't really have lines.
Yep.
And then that becomes a thing. But so it's just weird. Like, I don't... It feels like they really needed to work on the screenplay. Like, I think that is... Because I don't really have a problem with the direction. The tone... I could forgive the tone, because again, I love Wanted. Wanted has a horrifying tone. Wanted is like an MRA Reddit Red Pill monsters fantasy come to life. But it's
that makes him the hero at the end too.
Yeah, but he's got like it's got a verve and a weird humor to it that I kind of get behind. And this movie is so
calculated,
po-faced, humorless. Like again, I even like the Boondock Saints. Still, I'm not one of the people who's like turned his back on that movie. There is something about that where I'm like, you know, it's the two brothers. For all my Rick and Morty fans out there.
Yes.
So it's these two brothers.
John Michael Vincent.
Calling all Jan Michael Vincents. So it's these two brothers who decide they're gonna kill a bunch of bad people. And like it's a stupid and or inspired idea for a film. And the fact that they're so bumbling is kind of fun. But also like you just kinda like they're kind of fun to be around. Like, I don't really mind them. Like, their friend is kind of an asshole, but he's supposed to be an asshole. And in this movie, it's the complexity of the plot, I think, that really does this in for me. Because in the action scenes are great. There's that uninterrupted 7-minute fight, which, like, was truly exhilarating. But, like, beyond that, even some of the other fights
Staircase
that you see
that we're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Even some of the other fights that you see in the trailer, like, just they don't really come together in that way for me.
Also, like 2 minutes.
Yeah, that's the thing.
There's
like,
not a lot of fighting in this movie.
Because again, the plot is crazy, and there's so many points where like they have to make a play at spycraft, and the movie just doesn't have the story to hold that up. And it feels disinterested in it, but it devotes so much time to it. It's hard to really pin down what they were thinking in terms of the balance that they struck. So yeah, all in all, I'm not a fan. I don't know. Like, I love the aesthetics of this movie. I think the direction is good in the moments when I know what the hell's going on, because a lot of times I'm just distracted by questions as to what's happening. Like there's a very simple question, just like, what is this list and what does it mean to people? Like, are they worried that the people who have this list are going to use it to hurt people? Or is it a list that is necessary to find out information about people? Because there's a point where they're kind of like, oh, there may be a second list. Okay,
yeah,
cool. We can get that one. But I thought the problem was that the list was in play in general.
There's also an idea, too, that the list is missing information as well.
Yeah.
Which plays into the plot in ways that make no sense either.
Yeah. I don't know. It's...
Yeah. This film, there's a lot of things that you can kind of touch on as issues with it that seem – and that's the most frustrating thing with a lot of these films that have these kind of obvious issues where it's just like give it another pass or two. Like have someone like come in, read it and be like, hey, this doesn't make any sense. Make it make sense and then send it back to the writer. And see if they can make it make sense, because a lot of this stuff just doesn't make sense and it's needlessly convoluted and confusing. And it's just like this is the worst part of a lot of the spy thrillers where they just kind of keep throwing these complexities and complexities and complexities. And really, if anything, this film needed the John Wick model of just, hey, there's a list out there. It's a bad list. Let's go get that list and just have her kind of mow down people in that way. But I don't think it's weird because I don't think this film is interested in setting Charlie's up in that way, because like I mentioned, she doesn't ever really run around with a handgun killing people. She's always doing hand to hand combat. So it's almost like she's trying to, I wouldn't say blend in, because she's definitely not blending in.
She's definitely got blonde hair. I mean, she can't.
That as well. She's definitely like leaving a wake of like people just injured and brutalized behind her. And so I'm not sure what she's doing by not killing them, but it is kind of an interesting touch that she isn't just running around with like a machine gun killing people. She's sure. Like, I don't think she ever walks into a situation with a handgun, period. I think she picks one up a couple of times. Yeah. And it's just like, what is going on in this film? I don't understand what they're trying to do. It's because they're setting it up in the Cold War, Berlin Wall era and that's the setting, I guess, because they don't want a bunch of people to be getting mowed down with machine guns in that scenario. I don't understand what's going on.
I don't know, because they send her, first of all, they send her in and they give her a cover story, and she like immediately isn't following her cover story.
Sure.
Yeah. Like, she gets picked up under her Christian name at the airport, and I just don't know if you I'm going to ask you guys a question. What does she do to try to find the list?
There is I think more people do things for her than anything else. I don't remember them saying, isn't she like an asset requisition expert or something along those lines? It's like oh, so she's good at finding stuff? Is that what you're trying to say? Sure. Thank you. Like, I don't need all those words to tell me that she's good to find.
But like, when she's in Berlin, the one proactive thing she seems to do is go to a person's apartment.
Yep.
Yeah. And go to the watchmaker, which, you know.
Yeah, but the watchmaker is the person that, like, that's a contact that she's utilizing. Sure. It's she doesn't do anything. Like, she just goes to him.
In a better version of this movie, the people would have watched like the first couple of seasons of The Americans, mm-hmm. and then like given her like 4 to 5 discrete mini missions within this grander mission.
Absolutely.
And like had her do stuff, like had her,
or even just begin with one, like just in the middle.
The one thing that she keeps doing over and over and over, and it ends up kind of playing out towards the end of the film.
Turning on
in
the
a
radio.
Very no, it is yeah, it is her microphone. She keeps wearing a wire, right? Mm-hmm. And they keep plotting this out. And for the first half of the movie, you're like, okay, but what is she doing with that? Like absolutely nothing. She's getting no new information, because all the information she's getting is information that's literally being told to her because she's wearing a wire. And you're just like, I don't understand what's going on right now. Why is this happening?
The other thing is, like, she pretty immediately susses out that James McAvoy is like probably a traitor.
Yeah.
And then like makes no effort to create any kind of firewall between him and her.
Sure. Like, because she realizes pretty immediately that he lied, like, within, like, their first conversation. Like, it's, yeah. Like, that is, yeah, no, those are the things that make it extra weird. And, like, Bill, I think you mentioned this already, but, like, it is kind of crazy that this is a spy movie where she, not only does she, like, throw away cover stories, but she, like, attracts attention to herself all the time.
that hair is not blending in, especially in the middle of East Germany. I you know, at one point she is interacting at one point someone interacts with her and speaks, I think she
the bar,
yeah, someone speaks German to her, and then she's like, oh, did you expect me to be Swedish? And you're like, yeah, with that hair. Like, come on.
No, she's like, no German tonight, and then speaks Swedish. And it's like, okay, like, what is this person supposed to think, that this person speaks three languages? Like, I understand that comes back later, but it's that stuff that's like, I don't find you remotely convincing as anything other than like an avatar of coolness, like of this like image that the movie's trying to project, but nothing that makes sense within the fabric of what I'm supposed to recognize you as in the world.
And go ahead.
Okay, well, I was going to say we need to get spoilers for like the biggest issue that I have.
Okay.
Did you have a final non-spoiler thing to say?
Absolutely. Apparently, a lot of spies work, behind the scenes in their underwear. I just want to mention that.
Again, I'm willing to let that go because
I mean that's fine.
There in a movie like this, it's the '80s. She's got a lot of huge off-the-shoulder sweaters. Like, I'm fine with that. If you want to chase that aesthetic rabbit down that aesthetic rabbit hole, I'm fine with it. But, like, it really is truly the plot that destroys this movie for me. And so let's get into spoilers so we can talk about how that happens. The one piece of personal information that we seem to have about Miss Blonde, first name Atomic, is that she spent some time with this Agent Gascoigne, and he's dead now. And so she has a picture that she burns, and then she has like a dream sequence about him. And he is of the opinion that Satchel is the person who double crossed him and got him killed. And then at the end of the movie, we find out that she is Satchel.
No, she's not. She works for the CIA, right. So she double-crossed. She double-crossed MI6.
Right.
I think
the KGB guy seems to believe that she's working for him too. He calls her Satchel.
Yes.
When she uses the American accent, I swear to God, I just wanted to die.
She is double-crossing him as well. I think she set him up. So she was feeding him false information. And I think her cover was blown. I don't know. Hold on. There was an article I just ran across that was like the ending of Atomic Blonde explained. And I'm like, what?
Crazy. So like there was a article or a video that came out earlier this week, and it was like the ending of Castaway explained. And my response to this was to retweet it and say, in today's episode of Bad Content is Still Content, goddammit, we have this bullshit. But like, I could use one of those videos for this movie. This one deserves it. Cause like, I don't understand what's happening most of the time. We have James McAvoy, who is fairly obviously like fucking around, but I'm still not sure why or to what end. And there's a point when he's talking to John Goodman's CIA guy, and John Goodman's CIA guy says, like, you know, Lorraine Broughton is still alive, and he, like, James McAvoy does, like, a villainous, I'm gonna murder that bitch, storm out. But we later find out that the CIA guy is actually Lorraine's handler. I just don't get it. I don't understand what's going on. Like, I really don't. I still don't know what Lorraine got told about Percival by the French woman, Delphine.
Who exists only so they can have a lesbian sex scene.
Yes. And then I think they're trying to do something like, oh, this work is hell, like, it changes who you are.
Sure.
It is really funny.
Or a rock star.
Yeah. There was someone in the audience that died laughing when that scene happened. And I was just like, wow, someone's into this. Like, or they're just having like just shits and giggles. Cause
how bad, like, is French intelligence?
Yes.
When that your someone operative opens with, I don't like my job.
I thought it was going to be a little like she's so demystified by the whole process of being a spy. I guess because she just runs around taking pictures of everybody.
Yeah, she's like, I joined this because I thought it would be fun, but I should have been a poet or a rock star. It's like, what the fuck are you? How did you get through? I'm assuming the 12 layers of training and security clearance to get this posting in one of the most volatile regions in the world. Like, that should be the thing she says after they have sex.
Sure.
You know? Not like the thing that she says while they're in a strobing hallway. Anyway, Bill, did you find this article and did it answer any questions?
Is it the Vulture one, Bill?
Okay, yes. Okay, so the second reveal, Broughton is the lyingest liar of them all, working not only as a fake double agent for the KGB, so she was a fake double agent for the KGB, but as a CIA plant within MI6. Okay. Yeah, and then it goes on to explain a bunch of other stuff, which just still doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
But like, so, I don't know. So she was always Satchel, right?
I don't know.
And like, she cuts the we find out that the reason she's constantly bugging herself is so that she can create a false narrative that Percival was trying to do something. And I still don't understand what he was doing, because he met with the Russians.
Yes, he did. Like, and that's why he had to kill Delphine, because that thing was obviously exposed through him.
Right.
Yeah.
But like, the movie at the end kind of makes it seem like he's innocent and she's framing him.
Yes.
But what is he innocent of?
Nothing. He's innocent of being Satchel. So right. He's not the one pulling the strings on this scenario. He's not the double agent. He's just an asshole.
He just wants to sell to the highest buyer or the highest bidder, right?
I guess. I don't know.
And how like, is why, he why, able to find why does, that one guy so quickly, and Lorraine is still like bebopping around in her neon hotel room?
I don't understand how like he just finds him and then offs him right there and then, and you're like, wait, like wasn't he actually like a decent KGB operative? I mean, that is kind of one of the things that the guy says at the very beginning was, I just got tracked down, but yeah, I just got tracked down by one of the shittiest KGB operatives. Sure, yeah. He says something along those lines, and you know, or he says, I thought they would send the best.
Yeah.
You're definitely not the best.
He says, like, you're the it's just like hunting the KGB or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
and then like the movie ends with her in the hotel room. Which I didn't even remember from the trailers, but I was like, oh, wow.
Oh, so man. Showed, like, the last
thing in the trailers. So there was another way to completely deflate your tension. And then she leaves, and then you see, like, that young East Berliner standing there waiting with a cleaning crew.
Sure.
But, like, that's, like, this... So movies do this all the time. Like, let's go back to The Fate of the Furious. Like, it had the same thing, where it's, like, you've seen this guy earlier, so we'll have him help so that you can feel like a fuller world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But like in The Fate of the Furious, that guy was a Cuban like crime boss who showed up in New York just to like fake break down a car in front of like a stoplight. Yeah. And in this movie, it's this guy who's working in the East Berlin, and now he's in Paris pretending to be like a concierge at a hotel. And it's like, yeah. Wouldn't it have been easier to leave that man in the country of his origin and just find a new operative? Like, do you really need him that much?
Yeah,
I don't know. Just to say, wouldn't it be more thematically bold if they did actually kill her at the end? Wouldn't that actually go with the movie more than one final, like, gotcha?
Yeah, I would have thought so, actually. But then we wouldn't have found out that she was an American.
Which is somehow even worse.
Yeah, that's... I don't know. Again, because I don't know exactly what this list is all about, I don't have kind of, like, any idea what's happening.
So the list, I guess, from what I just read, the list... And yes, I have to read stuff to figure this shit out. That's how muddled this film is. The list is all the operatives in East Germany, in Berlin. And so,
that's Skyfall, isn't it? Isn't that like the Skyfall plot?
It's also the plot of the first Mission Impossible. It's the plot of The Recruit.
So basically,
it had just been an atomic bomb.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
So basically, the only factor here is kind of uncovering the dealings and the spycraft that happened in Berlin. So once the Berlin Wall falls, I guess none of this shit matters anymore. So I'm just like, what?
Yeah, don't know.
I don't know. Why? Why does this film have to take place in East Germany? Like, why does it have to do that?
I mean, it's an interesting place, and like this time period,
sure,
is like volatile. So like, there's some good stuff to be mined from there. But it really should have been, like, the Russians lost a nuke, and
sure. It's
like a suitcase bomb or something. And, you know, your ex-husband or whatever was murdered trying to get it back, and so now we've brought you in. And so, like, boom! There's your story.
Well, the weird thing is they could have... Brian, they kind of could have done it two ways, in the sense of they could have made this story from the beginning about that, like, you know, that constant ambiguity, like something a la The Americans, or they could have made something that's a straight-ahead action movie. But it's the fact that they try to combine them and try to communicate that this whole thing was about some, larger idea is what I think makes it even more, you know, belly flop on it or, you know, fall on its face. Like, it is that combination of, like, hubris.
Or, you know, you could have basically just made this a Cold War Haywire.
Yeah. Yes.
Like, Haywire has like two missions where like there is no problem and everything is fine, and then one mission where things get turned around, and then from then on you're just fighting the same people as the first time, but for different reasons.
And Haywire like uses the convolution to actually say something, like other than everything's pointless.
And, like, and it also Haywire has like an insane structure.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Like, Haywire, like, almost brings you into it in a way where it's like, we're not really going to ever give you the full story. You're just going to have to deal with it.
Yeah.
Like that's the weird thing about Atomic Blonde, is it wants to be self-contained, but it also does kind of want to, you know, like, evoke, like, Le Carré with, like, suspense. But the thing is, like, none of those scenes, there's no, like... It's so weird. This movie is so pretty, but I felt no atmosphere in it. Yeah. Like, I was never really like feeling a sense of. I mean,
the
let
music
alone
didn't do that for you, Michael.
No,
the George Michael song was pretty decent, but other than that, I
don't know what it is.
I love the 80s. It's not really what I wanted for this movie.
I don't know what it is about movies recently. Between, like, The Guardians and Baby Driver and now this, like, people are really like, we need diegetic music. Like, the audience is not good. We've learned from Suicide Squad that the audience will not accept non-diegetic music.
Yeah, there's a sequence in this film where, what is it? It's the opening song. I can't remember what it is, but I think it might be Sweet Dreams or something like that. But it's playing very, very loud. And then a operative opens his car door, and we find out it's the radio music inside of his car. And you're like, oh, okay, cool. Yay.
It's
like,
the same thing with...
Congratulations. You weave that in.
The music here skips between... diegetic and non-diegetic with like a balletic intensity. Like, there's the scene where
if they had put that much effort into the plotting of this movie, it would be a whole lot better.
Well, here's a scene
and then that, just turn it into a silent movie.
Here's a scene that many of you may have forgotten. Remember when I assume the KGB head guy like butchers a skate punk
I did not forget that. I was just thinking about how odd that sequence was and how weird it is. Like,
and how it accomplishes
why is he
nothing?
So angry? He's so angry with the punks. Like, they didn't do anything. They are not spyglass. Like, come on, man.
Yeah, he's like, where is this guy? And at first I thought he was asking about the guy who stole the list, and then I realized he was talking about spyglass.
Sure.
And like, yeah, he turns on 99 Luftballons, and and it starts off diegetic, and then when he's beating a guy to death, it becomes non-diegetic. And then once he's done, it becomes diegetic again.
but that's the thing, too, is that, like, that sequence is so, like I don't know. Like, John Wick and John Wick 2, like, it's not like they're, you know, reinventing the wheel or anything. But I wasn't always feeling like
they were set the wheel, Michael.
God,
I wasn't feeling like they were set to triggers the way this was. It's like every sequence, like the set piece started, I'm like, all right, well, I know where this is going. Someone's going to get thrown through the screen. That skateboard's going to come into it. James McAvoy is obviously over there with the screwdriver. We don't actually need an insert shot to see him with it. Like, it's just – it's so it's such a weird balance between being didactic but also trying to be like atmospheric, and it is like,
and
I don't know,
around the character who is purposefully icy, but like icy to the point that it actually kind of keeps you on the outside.
Sure,
because again, in Haywire Gina Carano, not exactly the most charismatic actress on earth.
Sure,
but she brings something. She, like, just the way she smiles, like, is like this wry kind of like, oh good, I get to beat someone up again thing.
Yeah.
And they found that with Ruby Rose in John Wick 2.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot about her. She doesn't even have lines.
No.
But like,
yeah,
when she signs and she has that kind of like look. Oh my god.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any final things to say about this movie?
Why is Toby Jones in this movie?
Because he's Toby Jones, man.
Anytime,
like, I love that man.
You have a British spy film, Toby Jones is contractually supposed to be a part of it.
He's got a good agent.
The
clearly.
British government is like, hey, I heard that you had a movie about British spycraft. That means that Toby Jones has to be in it. And if it takes place during the Cold War, that means he has to be like above the above the title casting.
Wait, I have a legit thing though. Okay,
all of these not been legit?
Well, no, I was joking around there, but like, yeah.
Some of them have been a little petty, but
who is Bill Skarsgård's character? Like the person they go to facilitate leaving East Berlin.
He's like part of the youth movement.
Okay, but then like. That seems like it's also been instrumental to the whole movie at the end? Or is it just at the end where they're now teaming up with Charlize?
Yeah, it seems like that's the thing. Like, he seems like he just wants East Berlin to be okay. But then at the end, he's in Paris going to help her out with murdering some people.
But So it is the youth movement. So was he in that scene when we first meet James McAvoy in Spyglass?
I don't think so. Because he is the contact that she gets from the watchmaker after she decides she can't trust James McAvoy.
Okay. And why? You know what? No. Yeah.
Anyway, if you know what the hell was going on in Atomic Blonde, give us an email, podcast@thefilmstage.com. I really wanted to like this film. I've been looking forward to this first trailer. And honestly, I feel like that trailer is a better... I would rather see the movie that was in that trailer than this film.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So that's it. Let me remind everyone to find us on Patreon and become a patron. patreon.com/thefilmstageshow. Also, we are brought to you by Mubi, the streaming online cinema. You can get a free 30-day trial of Mubi by going to mubi.com/filmstage. And I was like, usually I try to like tie Mubi into the film that we've seen or anything, but I'm just like, I'm still so like lost in the world of Atomic Blonde that I'm having trouble thinking. But anyway, if you'd like to try out Mubi, they have a great app that you can use on your Roku or your smart device. You can also just go to their website, and you can download their films to watch them on the go. Again, all you have to do is go to mubi.com/filmstage to get access to one of the greatest movie streaming apps available. That is that. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. And let's tell the fine people at home where we could be found between now and the next time. Bill Graham.
You can find me on Twitter at CableBFG. You can also find me mainly on the Slack channel where I interact with all of our Patreon members. Woo!
And Michael Snydell.
You can find me on Twitter where I'll be making my own 80s playlist that you haven't heard 100 times. I wrote some things lately. I wrote about Catherine Bigelow's latest film, Detroit, which I assume we're going to be talking about on the podcast. But yes. I wrote about that, had some thoughts. And I can say this now. I have an interview with John Cho going up this week.
Oh, nice.
All right, you can find me on Twitter at Brian J. Rowan. I wrote something about Dunkirk that you can find on either my personal site, dearfilm.net, or thefilmstage.com. And, that's about that. Next week, or later this week, we may be talking about A Ghost Story, newest film by David Lowery, so check that out.
I also interviewed him. You can read that on the Film Stage.
Awesome. And that is that for today. So ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us, and come back next time.